Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, we barely even recovered from Penn State losing the semifinal game against Notre Dame. And all of a sudden, we just have to delve into next season and all the news that's going on. There is no off season, is there?
No, there isn't. Not anymore. I think after spring football's over, that's when we truly get a break. But with all the juicy news here and all the juicy headlines, we got plenty to chat about.
We certainly do. And my plan was to talk to you about the portal, folks coming in, folks heading out. And then we get the bombshell, Tom Allen, defensive coordinator at Penn State for 1 year. He's now on his way out the door to Clemson. So what do we know about this, Zach?
Well, a lot of this has to do with speculation, but I think Tom Allen leaving for Clemson, it makes a lot of sense for him personally. And I think that's where Tom Allen is in the stage of his career. So there, I don't think he had a bad time at Penn State, but just given where Tom Allen is in his career, his family's also down south as well. Now, he has no familiarity with Dabo Sweeney, Clemson, the ACC, but he spent time in the SEC, spent time at Ole Miss. He's been in Florida. Basically, it's either he's been in the southeast part of the country or up in Indiana, whether that's as a head high school football coach or the head coach of the Indiana Hoosiers. So I think this move is part of it is comfortability. He's never been in Pennsylvania. And I'm not trying to say that him and James Franklin butted heads, but there was clearly a little bit of a power struggle going on. There was some sort of disconnect because I don't think Tom Allen liked the idea of moving up to the booth to call plays. And maybe that's something that Clemson pitched to him and say, hey, we can match your salary and give you some of those responsibilities back that you had before that you missed. So it was all the stuff in between how Tom Allen had to communicate the plays or communicate through Dan Connor. And then Dan Connor was able to articulate it to the players. So if you really read the tea leaves, it wasn't a perfect setup between Penn State and Tom Allen and James Franklin and Tom Allen, because, you know, this happened very quickly. This went from a rumor on Sunday night into Monday morning. Okay, Tom Allen is now officially linked to Clemson and a decision will be made in the coming days. That was Pete Thamel of ESPN saying that the decision will be made, you know, relatively soon, 48, 72 hours, give or take. And then minutes later, I kid you not, 5 minutes later, it's happening. He has accepted the job. He is Clemson's next defensive coordinator. So Penn State clearly did not do anything to put up a fight. Clemson offered. That was their top choice for the next defensive coordinator with Dabo Sweeney. And Penn State said, go for it. You're free to go.
Well, it's one of those things when you hear it, you think there's more to the story. And because it's essentially a lateral move. It's not a promotion. It's not a position coach becoming a coordinator. And it's not a move up. I don't think you look at Clemson coordinator position as a better job than Penn State a coordinator position. You know, Penn State is part of the Big Ten, a lot more money going on there. Penn State's coming off of Final Four. Just from the outside looking in, you got to say there's something else going on here, something more. And some of the things that you alluded to, Zach, I'm also thinking we're probably going to hear more about this in the next few days. Some more information will come out.
I don't know how much more we'll hear. I think Tom Allen's a respectable guy. I don't think James Franklin is going to throw him under the bus by any stretch of the imagination. This was a top 10 defense. They made the national semifinal. Now, granted, did the Penn State defense play its best 24/7? No, they didn't, but I don't like this. I personally like Tom Allen as a football guy, as a defensive mind. I thought he was a great defensive coordinator, But it clearly was not working between Tom Allen and Penn State and James Franklin and Tom Allen. There was clearly some sort of disconnect. It wasn't bad. I'm not trying to stir anything up, but clearly, if you read in between the lines, it was not perfect.
Well, for it to have that turnover that quickly after 1 year and the success that this team had. Now, I'm often teased about this, Zach, that I'm the Manny Diaz guy. I really liked what he did with Penn State's defense last couple of years. So I was always so I believe, though, it was hard for any coach to come in and have the fan base say, wow, this is so much better than what we had before, because Manny Diaz left it at such a high level. But as you pointed out, overall, the numbers looked really good for this Penn State defense on the surface. And it does make you revisit some of those things that you wonder how at the time, maybe we don't think so much about it. Like you said, the move from the sideline upstairs, that kind of thing. Or even the little remark, you know, James Franklin making about early on Tom Allen blowing his whistle like the head coach.
Yeah. You don't know the conversations that happen behind closed doors. And again, I'm not trying to make this bigger than what it is, but we also can't ignore that, hey, these things are out here. And I at least put something into them. I put some stock into them. Tom Allen has been a head coach at a Power Four school. He's been a defensive coordinator, and he's coached in the SEC. James Franklin holds this very high standard. And I'm not trying to imply that Tom Allen didn't take his job seriously or anything like that. But I do feel, and Clemson is still going to remain competitive. But the family aspect, to pour every single ounce of blood, sweat, and tears into a program, I don't think that's where Tom Allen's at anymore. I also think that just based on, here, this was something that was initially reported by local media adjacent to Clemson, you know, regional newspapers and everything like that. He was on the short list as from the media perspective, saying it makes a lot of sense for Tom Allen and Dabo Swinney to work together because of their faith and their beliefs and the way that they just conduct themselves on a personal level. So Dabo Swinney and Tom Allen are going to mesh and have a much better working and personal relationship than James Franklin and Tom Allen. For what it's worth, I just don't think culturally Tom Allen was a perfect fit for what Penn State wants to do presently. And that's okay. It is okay to admit that. And you're not going to realize that until you actually spend 12 months on the job. I think Tom Allen realized that. And I think Penn State realized that. Again, if they really wanted him to return, they would have given him a salary raise. It wouldn't have happened from, hey, this is a report. 5 minutes later, it's happening. It happened too quickly.
Right. And let's face it, if things would have been different last Thursday, the season's still going on. You know, if you're in a job and everything's hunky-dory, everybody's happy, a change doesn't happen this quickly. There was conversations. Somehow Dabo Swinney knows that Tom Allen isn't 100% happy at Penn State. Or did Tom Allen reach out because he wasn't 100% happy? As I said, there was something more going on, because it's too much of a lateral shift for there not to be. All right, I'm going to ask you the unfair question here, because we usually get surprised by the answer. But it's time now for James Franklin to hire again, new defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You know, any names you want to throw out there, thoughts? If it were Zach Seiko making this hire, where are you looking?
If I'm making the hire, no circumstances, no obstacles, Danton Lynn. I think Danton Lynn is arguably, if you give him the best resources, which Penn State presently has, I mean, this is a defense that is still not going to, if you put the right defensive coordinator, plug the right defensive coordinator in with this present group of players, and I know you still need to get denied Dennis Sutton back, potentially Kobe King, but Zachy Wheatley, you get King Mack from the transfer portal, and then Zane Durant, you know, commits, and then you have all of this freshman and sophomore talent that is just waiting to break out. Danton Lynn's your guy. Now, that's not going to happen because I think behind the scenes, his family has expressed that they don't want to leave the California area. They don't want to move to State College and relocate. So he's going to stay at USC. But if I'm picking the defensive coordinator, Danton Lynn's my top choice. So if I have to go somewhere else, a lot of names make sense. Penn State could hire internally. Terry Smith, he's the associate head coach. He's James Franklin's right-hand man. I don't think he needs that responsibility. But Anthony Poindexter or Dan Connor makes sense. Why I don't think Penn State's going to go that route as a new defensive coordinator to promote somebody as a new defensive coordinator because they need to win a national championship now. The window of opportunity is now. If this was, hey, we have time to allow you to grow into this role, then it's a little bit of a different story. But they need a home run. They need to strike gold. They need a grand slam now. So they're basically going to get the equivalent of Andy Kotelnicki as a defensive coordinator. Pat Fitzgerald makes sense. It follows the line of Manny Diaz and Tom Allen as former Power Four conference head coaches. And Pat Fitzgerald has been unemployed. So I know that Penn State, James Franklin's going to have a mutual respect for him as a football coach. Would he take that job potentially? Jim Leonard up in the NFL, he's been a defensive coordinator at Wisconsin. Ryan Walters, same thing, head coach at Purdue that was recently let go. And he was the defensive coordinator for Brett Bielema at Illinois. And then with all these NFL dominoes, Jim, that are still waiting to happen, we don't know if somebody is going to be available that isn't presently as we're having this conversation, but in a few days or in a week might. Because Marcus Freeman, it might be interviewed by the Chicago Bears, and who knows how that materializes. Al Golden is somebody that's going to pop up on a list because he played at Penn State, right? He wants to be a coach there, but I think he wants to be the head coach, not the defensive coordinator, not second in command. And I think that so that one, so you can strike off an Al Golden, but there's plenty. Elijah Robinson at Syracuse, defensive coordinator there, makes a ton of sense. And honestly, if I can't get Danton Lynn, then I'm going after Elijah Robinson if I'm Penn State with his time at Texas A&M and now Syracuse as the defensive coordinator. You need somebody that's proven. You can't take a chance when you can win a national title again in 2025, 2026.
One of the things, though, is I feel pretty confident in James Franklin's hiring ability based on his hiring history. Yes.
He's proven that.
And he's gotten big name guys. He's gotten very highly thought of guys. And I also like this former head coach thing. It obviously doesn't have to be. We saw with Andy Kotelnicki, but Manny Diaz, Tom Allen. I like guys who have had that head coaching experience. It just feels like that's a great part of the resume. All right, that's it for quarter number one. We've got one more quarter to go with Zach. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Glonte. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, before we get into quarter number two, tell our listeners where they find Zach Seiko.
Well, I appreciate that. Over on YouTube at Locked On Nittany Lions, it's a daily podcast devoted to Penn State football, basketball, and wrestling. And honestly, Jim, I don't think I have missed a show. Like, I mean that truly. It is truly daily. I don't think I've missed a show or an update on Penn State since the new year has started. And honestly, even a little bit before that. So since Christmas has wrapped up, it has truly been your team every day over at Locked On Nittany Lions.
Fantastic. That's Locked On Nittany Lions on YouTube with Zach Seiko. Make sure you head over there. All right, Zach, let's shift gears here a little bit. As I said at this top of the show, there is no break here. Season ended on Thursday, and we knew it was coming. It's a new world. The portal, NIL, how that affects it, it's a big deal. So Penn State has already dove into the transfer portal. It's gone both ways. They've lost some players. They've brought some players in. Let's go on the positive side. Let's talk about players that they've brought in. And it's been a conversation now for more than a season. Wide receiver is the position that needs the most help. We've already seen a couple of the younger wide receivers are out. At least they're off the roster. The assumption is they've hit the portal, Zach. A couple wide receivers have come in, namely Kyron Hudson from USC and Devontae Ross from Troy. Let's start with Hudson from USC. He's 6'1", 200 pounds. And Zach, my introduction to Hudson was early in the season, or actually their first game against LSU. He made one of the single most incredible catches you're ever going to see in a college football game. Now, his numbers, 38 receptions, 462 yards last year with USC. And if I have it correct, I think he has 1 year of eligibility left. That's what I know about Hudson. What else can you tell us, Zach?
Kyron Hudson will catch anything that is thrown his way. The issue with Hudson is that he doesn't get a lot of separation. So he is truly a possession receiver. He doesn't have a lot of speed, but he's tough as nails. He'll make all the catches in traffic that you ask him to. I don't think he had anything that was thrown his way. I think he had a perfect catch rate this past season per the analytics over for his final year at USC. He is a big receiver in terms of his build. He's 6'1", 210 pounds, give or take. I liken him, and I know Penn State fans may not like this immediately. He reminds me of Julian Fleming. Julian Fleming did a lot for Penn State. He set the bar for, you know, how do you practice? How do you conduct yourself? And I know it didn't translate to the results, but at least I'm not worried about, I guess, in a sense, the guys that are on their way out. I'm more concerned of what precedent did Tysier Denmark have, or a Josiah Brown, or a Peter Gonzalez, because those guys that are true freshmen that are going to be the faces of the Penn State receiver core, they needed a positive influence. And Julian Fleming was that. He was also a dog on the outside. He would make every single block you asked him to, and it's why Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen looked like themselves again, because you had somebody that was not afraid to lay a block and was not a big diva about it either. So Julian Fleming did everything, but that's what Kyron Hudson is. Is he going to be the top-tier blocker that Julian Fleming was? No, but he will give you that. He is somebody that you can leave in on the boundary, and it causes confusion on the defense. Kyron Hudson's out here. You have wide receivers out here, but you're running the ball at us, right? It's so obvious when you go 2-3 tight ends and then you run the football. But now you have Kyron Hudson out there, and he still gives you a capable blocker. So know that he will catch anything thrown his way. He'll lay a block and lay it effectively. As far as Devontae Ross goes, Devontae Ross is the separation guy. He's your slot receiver. Speed, speed, speed. You are getting somebody that can catch the deep ball, that can run after the deep ball. You get somebody that could potentially be a punt returner for Penn State. I don't think Zion Tracy showed a lot of optimism. He was serviceable, but he wasn't the best option. And Devontae Ross at least gives you another bit of competition, somebody on the depth chart. These players, are they the home run, you know, type of players as far as, you know, this is your splash in the transfer portal? No, but they give you something, and they're two guys that should be expected to start.
The pluses and minuses of these guys, first of all, talking about Hudson, when you say he catches the ball thrown to him, love that. The fact that he's not a prima donna, love that. And we all know that's often the case with wide receivers. I like his size. I like the blocking ability. Obviously, the one statement you made, the red flag, is getting separation. And it leads me to a question, though, with that. With Penn State's wide receivers, we always hear this, can't get separation. But we also saw Drew Aller's willingness to throw the ball to Tyler Warren, whether he was open or not, because Tyler Warren could go make that contested catch. it's made me wonder, you know, is there a confidence issue with Drew Aller with his receivers? And it may be warranted, that lack of confidence. But when you start to hear lack of separation, that's a red flag for Penn State fans.
Like I said, in the comparison to Julian Fleming, it is going to be, but you can't just look at it. There's a lot of gray. It's not necessarily one way or the other. I'm just saying Kyren Hudson, because wide receivers fall into, like every position, wide receivers fall into a category. Is this a speed wide receiver? Because I don't want people to get confused and say, oh, Devontae Ross is, you know, XYZ, or Kyren Hudson can do XYZ because of this one-handed spectacular catch. But Kyren Hudson's a possession receiver and an avid run blocker. Devontae Ross is a speedster and gives you a home run threat over the top. And Drew Aller, we know, can throw the deep ball. To address Drew Aller's confidence and everything else, whether that's in the wide receivers, in himself, I mean, it's certainly there. He certainly has confidence issues, and that's why you saw the mechanics break down against Notre Dame. But it wasn't something we had seen throughout the 2024 season. Did Drew have some bad plays here and there? Yes, but he never lost Penn State a game. That is always something that I was willing to hang my hat on about Drew Aller, is that he is never going to lose Penn State a game. And frankly, he lost Penn State the game against Notre Dame. I was a little harsh with my immediate criticism of him, but when you look at the analytics, when you just say, hey, if you had made one pass, if you had hit Nicholas Singleton in the flat just in front of the goal line, that is a routine easy throw. You missed him on the wheel route. You missed Tyler Warren when he was open multiple times. These are easy throws for Drew Aller, not for you and I, but for Drew Aller to miss these throws that we saw him make spectacular throws where defenders were draped on him against USC, against Oregon, and he threw it into double coverage and completed a pass, and you're missing an easy dump off pass to Singleton, which would have won you the game. So yes, I still stand by the fact that were there other circumstances, the wide receivers didn't help out at times. Penn State was out coached by Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman. Yes, all those things are true. But the biggest factor was that Aller was not making the easy plays when he always has and should have against Notre Dame. And we'd be talking about Penn State against Ohio State in a national championship. It primarily falls on Drew Aller with all these other factors, you know, mattering.
But it was on Drew Aller. But I do have to contradict you on one thing you said. You sure haven't seen me throw the ball, Zach.
That is true. I've seen you catch a punt.
anyway, you know what? You haven't seen me throw, but it was probably an accurate statement. In fact, forget the probably. It was an accurate statement. Let's move on. A couple familiar name coming back. Let's shift to King Mac.
Positive
safety.
Yeah.
And you know what? That was a guy when he, I think so many of us were very high on him when he came in.
Yeah.
And were really disappointed when he went to Alabama. When we heard he hit the portal, I think several of us were like, wouldn't it be nice to have him back? Well, he's back. What's Penn State getting in safety King Mac?
You're getting a starter. And I don't know what Penn State's defense is going to look like now that we just talked about Tom Allen's move, but whether it's a 4-2-5 or a traditional 4-3, Penn State is going to play to its strengths, and you're getting a player that is familiar with Penn State football. You're getting somebody that knows James Franklin, and James Franklin knows King Mac. King Mac is a special teams demon. So you can use him on special teams. You can use him as a slot defensive back. He can be your starting safety. I just love the versatility that King Mac brings. And it's a shame that he did go off to Alabama for a season, but I think he learned a lot. He played SEC football for a year. He figured out what worked for him and what didn't. So no harm, no foul in this case, because if King Mac becomes that player, I think he can be an all-conference player for Penn State. I think he can start. And at the very least, you are going to see somebody that is a key rotational player. I like the skill set that King Mac brings to the defense from a variety. He reads offenses so well. He has great play recognition. He knows where to be. And you do that in conjunction with the athleticism he brings, because that combination right there will get you pretty far in the game of football.
And I like how James Franklin handles the portal. He likes guys that he knows And obviously, yeah, it's absolutely not just that he recruited King Mack. He had King Mack on the team. Another name that Penn State fans might find familiar, Inai White, big recruit out of the state of Pennsylvania a few years ago, ended up going to Texas A&M. Not sure he had everything go his way at A&M. Mm-hmm. What do we know about him coming back to Penn State?
Bad luck to start his career. He's not a bad player. He was injured. He's been injured for most of his time at Texas A&M and never really got an opportunity because of it. We saw how it worked out with Chop Robinson. Deion Barnes has worked wonders with these. I mean, he went at Abdul Carter, played 1 year at defensive end and became a superstar and arguably should be taken in the top five. I was saying conservatively top 15. No, conservatively top 10. Even with one arm, he was going up against Notre Dame's offensive line and had a phenomenal game. Inai White shouldn't be held to the standard that he's the next Chop Robinson or the next Abdul Carter. I'm just saying that you can get the most out of Inai White. You should expect him to contend to be a starting defensive end, hopefully alongside Denai Dennis Sutton. But at the very least, Inai White should be one of those starting defensive ends if all goes well through spring football, summer workouts, and then, of course, fall camp.
We have 30 seconds left. Owen Wofley, TJ Shanahan, any quick thoughts?
TJ Shanahan is honestly, I can't believe they were able to get him. He is somebody, he is a former five-star prospect. I compare him to Vanga Uwane, big size, and he moves very well for a guard. Owen Wafel,
it's pronounced.
Okay. Depth piece right now, developmental piece. He'll factor into the defensive tackles later rather than sooner.
Thank you, Zach. Coming up next, we have Sean Gold. Stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, and as promised, in studio now, well, remote studio, I'll call it, Sean Gold. Sean, first of all, you are out in Southern California, my friend, right amidst all the fires. Oh, my goodness, that's crazy going on there.
Yeah, it's been absolutely insane. And I mean, luckily, you know, we got out of town a little bit, but we weren't in an immediate evacuation zone. But you just, I mean, you watch the news, you see the posts. So many people's lives have been completely changed these past couple days and past week. And it's sad. So, you know, the city's coming together and hopefully this all ends soon. But there's a lot of people who weren't as lucky as I am to be saying that we got a fire scare and that's it. So it's definitely a tough subject. It's hard to see what a lot of people are going through right now.
Well, our thoughts are with you and everybody out there. It's very crazy. I'm not sure many of us could imagine what it's like to go there. You showed me a picture just of the view and it's not the sun. It's actually from the fire. That's crazy.
Yeah, definitely nothing like I've ever seen before. And it's hard to put it into, you know, we could see a couple flames and that was crazy, let alone when you see the aerial shots on the news where it looks like it's just a volcano going off because there's so much fire and it's bigger than any fire that I've ever seen or been able to conceptualize before.
Well, that's wild. And it's a tough segue here, but people aren't tuning into us to hear updates on the fires. They want to talk about college football. And Sean, we had our college football semifinals. We had Penn State, Notre Dame, and we had Ohio State, Texas. First of all, let's start with Penn State, Notre Dame. Tough, tough loss for Penn State late in the game, 27-24. And before we get into the game itself, I wanted to ask you about going into the game. When you and I recorded, Notre Dame was a 2.5 point favorite. Yet by the time the game started, Penn State was the actual favorite. How did that happen?
It was really interesting. And you know, we got the reports that Notre Dame was getting the flu. I don't know how much of that I buy. Maybe you had one or two players not feeling great, but that was too much for it to completely flip. And, you know, I think that a lot of people like us thought that Penn State should probably win this game. Penn State, this entire season, the past couple of years, have beaten every single team where they're not playing a team that's significantly more athletic than them. The only team that fits that bill is Ohio State, who has these super athletes and these super skill positions. And that's really the only team Penn State's been losing to. So I thought Penn State had a great matchup against Notre Dame. I thought that they would be able to ground and pound, play defense, and get a win. And I think the market maybe started to adjust to that. And ultimately, for a while in the game, it looked like that was going to be the correct choice from the market to put Penn State as a one-point favorite there.
I'm with you. It did feel that way. And in watching the game, and this might sound like looking through the blue and white sunglasses, but I felt like even through the much of the game that Penn State was the better team. And in any kind of game that's competitive, you could always pick out a handful of plays. 3, 4, 5 plays, and there's some obvious ones. Drew Aller's late interception, where at that point, and I want to ask you about it, because when you get all this big game James criticism, you know, the only decision that I saw people get on him about was the decision to try to score late in the game when it was 24 all. Less than a minute to go. Penn State had to go. They only needed a field goal, so they didn't have to go the length of the field, and they questioned that. I didn't question that at all, because Drew Aller all season has shown the ability late in the half or late in the game, like we saw against USC, to quickly take his team down the field. So I find it hard to question that. How about you?
Yeah, I didn't question going for a score there at all. You know, you're not expecting an interception to come out of that. And that's not on James Franklin. Like, and Drew Aller took the blame. He should not have tried to force that ball. He even said he was trying to throw it at his feet. And there's other ways to get rid of a football than across the middle, trying to throw it at somebody's feet. So that's a mistake on Drew Aller's part, unfortunately. And, you know, he knows that too. But if you're James Franklin, you got to go try to win this game. You know, you can play for overtime, but you want to win this game in regulation, and at worst, then go to overtime and live, you know, for another couple overtime periods.
And it was interesting to me, Greg McElroy even was given a hard time, because at the start of the drive, he agreed with it and said, Drew Aller's not someone who makes a lot of mistakes. Oops. And it was actually for Drew Aller, this was a tough game for him, not only with that interception, but we saw earlier, of course, the missed pass to Nick Singleton that would have been a touchdown if he threw that a little bit better. That cost them 4 points because they settled for the field goal. But he also missed several other open receivers. Yeah, I'm a big Drew Aller guy, but no other place to look except that Drew Aller playing poorly being the difference in this game, Sean.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, it's hard. There were other aspects where Penn State could have made up for some stuff, but when you've got open throws, you've got to be able to make them, especially in a game that was that tight, where the stage was that big. There were definitely some missed opportunities that could have majorly swayed the game into Penn State's favor if they get a couple more completions.
Yes, no doubt that was the case. I'm sure Drew Aller will spend the entire offseason thinking about it. And, you know, this is kind of a theme that we'll talk about a little bit more as we talk about the final between Notre Dame and Ohio State. But for Drew Aller, he is coming back. There is the opportunity for redemption. I don't know if you've looked at Penn State's 25 schedule yet. They play Oregon early in the season.
Okay, I had not, but that's a game I'm sure he already has circled on that calendar. And like you said, he has a whole entire offseason now to think about this game. And I'm sure that's going to motivate him to get out and get better and make sure that doesn't happen again. So I'm really happy he's coming back. I know I'm sure there's some people who want, you know, who just like to see kind of quarterback change every now and then. But I think one more year of Drew Aller is really good for Penn State.
I do too, especially with so many of the other players returning. We saw Nick Singleton, Katron Allen, Denai Dennis Sutton, Zane Durant also all coming back. It looks like this is a team ready to run it back again. So you and I both had Penn State in this game, and we talk about this all year about games where we make a pick and afterwards we say to ourselves, boy, that wasn't a smart pick. This is one I'm comfortable with, and I think if they were to play again, I would make the same pick.
I am too. I think that they should have won this game. There's no other way to put it. They had the game and they let it slip away. I was confident in the pick. I don't regret taking Penn State there.
I just have an issue. How could they let you and I down? Our hard-earned money on them, and perhaps if they knew what was at stake for us, the outcome would have been a little different, Sean. All right, let's take a look at the other game, which was Ohio State, Texas. Now, I think as we recorded, Ohio State was a 5.5-point favorite. The spread was actually going down a bit as we got closer to the game because I saw it had changed right before in my notes. Right before recording, it had gone from 6 points to 5.5 points. Ohio State eventually won by 2 touchdowns, 28-14. You had Texas. I had Ohio State. But again, this is another one of those games, Sean, where, boy, the score is pretty deceptive for how the game went.
It definitely was, but I will say this is one that I regret because we have talked about it. When Ohio State is on, there is nobody in the country that can come close to touching them. And they weren't on the entire game. They kind of got some key plays later on, like that fumble recover touchdown. But Texas's offense continuously in big moments has let us down. And we saw it against Georgia twice this season. And I don't know why I thought we'd get something different from them against Ohio State in this game. But, you know, for all the hype around Texas's offense, they don't show up to me when it matters most, and that's exactly what we saw in this game.
When we were talking about the Penn State game, I said some folks questioned James Franklin's decision to try to score late in the game. Here was the controversial aspect of the play calling in this game. Texas is right on the doorstep. They're on the one-yard line. First down, they get nothing. Second down, they chose to go wide, pitched the ball out, and they lost 6 or 7 yards. This is the area where, if you remember, Penn State got criticized for doing the exact opposite, was trying to pound the ball in when they had first and goal against Ohio State from the 3 or 4 yard line. Again, fair criticism of Sarkisian to call that the wide play, the pitch to the running back.
I think so. A pitch on the goal line is one of my least favorite plays. If you want to spread it out, I think throwing the ball is a better option, but there's so much that can go wrong, and we've seen so many pitch plays result in negative yards, especially on the goal line and fourth down, that I did not like that call at all right there.
I don't have an issue with it, and here's why. Maybe this is a little bit of, you know, looking at history, and as a youngster, Sean, I'm going to share a little history with you, a little Penn State history. I'm going to go way back to 1979, Penn State, Alabama, Sugar Bowl. Penn State was going in to score, and they tried to pound it in, and it didn't work. There was a goal line stand by Alabama, and Alabama ended up winning by a touchdown. I think it was 14-7. And I think I've told this story on our air before. Many, many years later, doing some other kind of business by coins, I run into a player by the name of Marty Lyons, who played on that Alabama team and then was a New York Jet for many years, a real good NFL player. And I had to ask him about that series of plays. And he said, I'll be honest with you, we absolutely and completely sold out on stopping them running the ball right up the middle. if the quarterback would have just held on and gone around end, or if they did anything wide at all, they walk into the end zone, because we sold out on that. And that is always in my head when I see plays like this. I don't have a problem with the play call, and we all know where it ended up afterwards. All right, Sean, that is it for quarter number three. We come back, we'll wrap up what we're talking about, and we'll also look ahead to Notre Dame, Ohio State. Stay tuned for that.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold from Sean's Take. So, Sean, we're talking about the semifinals and how they turned out. Now it's Notre Dame, Ohio State for the championship. First of all, and I keep wondering, we went from the 4-team playoff to the 12-team playoff. Based on the college football rankings, Ohio State nor Notre Dame would have been part of a 4-team playoff. Do you look at that and say, hey, this is a good thing? Or you know what? That's a mistake. They shouldn't be the final two.
Yeah, actually, I would say I look at it and say this is a good thing. And it's kind of crazy because it seemed like, with not to throw some teams under the bus, but how Boise State and SMU both kind of got blown out in the first two rounds, it looked like 12 might be a little too much. But to your credit, like you just said, Notre Dame and Ohio State would not have been in that 4-team playoff. And obviously, they've done something right to deserve to be there right now. So I am really happy on how this has turned out to show that, you know what, you can have a loss to Michigan that makes you look really bad, but you can rebound, gain some momentum, and end up in the national championship game, which is why I think they put a 12-team playoff into fruition in the first place. So I'm happy with how this has turned out.
I am also, and I think also that this was probably a good season for the 12-team playoffs, because in the past half decade, maybe even decade, there's always been those couple teams who separated themselves from everybody else. Maybe Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia. Earlier in the decade, it was Clemson. And there would be like a fourth team that might sneak into the playoffs and show that they definitely did not belong. But this year, I think there was a lot more balance, a lot more parity.
I agree. And I'm excited to see how this evolves into the next couple of years as well, because I think it's also a great thing for a lot of these schools recruiting wise to say, you can come to X school that typically wouldn't have been in a 4-team playoff and have a chance to go to the college football playoffs. And that also takes some recruits away from these top tier schools like the Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio States, who were almost guaranteed to have a playoff berth every single year in the 4-team. So I think it's going to even things out a bit more. And I think we are going to see some teams that weren't originally in the top four end up making a run, which is really, really good for college football and for the fans.
Well, there's also this situation. I read an article a couple weeks ago, or maybe like last week, where we knew Notre Dame and Ohio State would be the finalists, that said Notre Dame and Ohio State, among the top teams, probably suffered the worst losses during the regular season. Notre Dame to Northern Illinois, Ohio State to a very average Michigan team at the end of the season. And their take on it was, that's enough right there to say those two teams don't deserve to be playing for the championship. I kind of feel like it's the opposite, that both of them, it's the redemption story. They both took those losses, translated it into something good afterwards.
I think so too. And I think before, college football was a very unforgiving sport. You had that one loss and your season was over. So I like the fact that you can rebound. You can have a bad game, which every team in the world at some point is going to have a bad game and still have a shot. Now, it doesn't excuse losing games like that, but I am glad that the leash is a little longer on forgiveness for a really good team, because as we can see, Ohio State deserves to be where they are today. And they would not have had a shot at being there if we had a different format in place.
That's exactly it. And if you're going to use that argument that we've heard a lot, which is who is the actual best team in the country, perhaps this is giving away my pick, but I think Ohio State is, at their best, is far and away the best team. And the fact that they were given the opportunity at this redemption, I don't think of it as a bad thing. I think of it as a great thing, and it's a great story. And the same thing with Notre Dame. If you recall, that was very early in the season when they lost to Northern Illinois. How many people were saying, that's it, Notre Dame is eliminated from the playoffs?
I know that I was at that point in time, and to their credit, they dominated their schedule after that. They did not question any of their wins after that. They went in and they did exactly what they needed to do. And I guess you could say that was their wake-up call. And for Ohio State, you know, they didn't always look that great this season. And then they lose to Michigan, and that was their wake-up call. And since then, they've been absolutely untouchable.
That's exactly it. And at the time, I'll give myself a little bit of credit when everybody else was saying Notre Dame's out. I said, hold on. If they win out, and it's a very doable schedule. Now, to their credit, they didn't just win most of all their games. They blew out their opposition most of the time also. So they look very good doing it. So a lot of credit to them. And I even heard some quotes out of South Bend. I don't know if it was a player or someone, a beat writer for the team, who said, you know what, in hindsight, it was probably that loss was probably good for the team. There was almost like a reset and a refocus that we saw after that game. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
I think there definitely is. And you never want to say as a member of a team that a loss was good for you, but there are these losses that are a true wake-up call. And both of these teams have those perfect examples where they had a loss that they should not have lost, and it really kind of made them rethink things and got them motivated again. So sometimes it is, you need that kick that you never want to admit that you needed to lose a game to get motivated, but sometimes that's just how it works.
And, you know, at the end of the day, I have no problem with Notre Dame and Ohio State being the final two teams standing. I think they've earned it, and I don't think those losses in the season makes me say, you know what, I think it'd be better if this team or that team. As much as I think, you know, Penn State had the opportunity against Notre Dame, but you got to give Notre Dame a lot of credit. Every time, you know, Penn State punched, they punched back, and they made plays when it counted.
They definitely did. And yeah, I don't think you can fault either team for being where they are. I mean, Oregon would have been the shoo-in at the beginning, and we saw what Ohio State did to them the second time they played each other. So both these teams very well deserve to be here, and I don't really think there were two other teams that you could say should have been in over them, because we saw head-to-head matchups go both ways for Notre Dame and for Ohio State, and here we are, national championship game, and I think it's the perfect matchup.
And just following up on the Ohio State-Oregon, they played each other very early in the season. It was at Oregon. Oregon barely escaped. And candidly, even after that game, that didn't convince me that Oregon was the better team. And because of the larger playoffs, Ohio State was still able to get in there and take care of business. And we saw that against Oregon. Probably the best performance of the year was that first half, where Ohio State got up on Oregon, a very good Oregon team, 34-0. All right, Sean, now it's time to look forward. We've got Ohio State, Notre Dame, with Ohio State being an 8.5-point favorite. Before you make your pick, first of all, looking at the spread, is it fair? Did it surprise you at all? What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's a hard one. I think it's pretty fair, though, because I think it shows what Ohio State is capable of. And I would say that, you know, the winner of Ohio State and Texas would have been the favorite in the national championship game. So if Texas was going to be about a 5-point favorite over Notre Dame if they played head-to-head, after seeing what Ohio State's done this playoff run, I think 8.5 is a pretty good number. It's also a number that's pretty gutsy, so it makes it a bit harder to predict than if it was, you know, 6.5 and we could say, oh, win by a touchdown. You know, you need a touchdown and then some, so it makes it a really, really interesting number here.
Yes, I think that 7 points, if you're more than 7 versus less than 7, that's a big difference. That's a huge difference. It's obviously more than a score. So here we have it. It's 8.5 points, Ohio State the favorite. Who's your pick?
Well, Jim, I have to go with the Ohio State Buckeyes to cover the spread to win the national championship, and here is why. They are the most athletic team in college football, and they have overcome some major losses like that Michigan loss. They've come all this way since then, and I just don't see it ending here. Notre Dame has had a very special season. They've overcome their own adversity. They've made a run that a lot of people didn't think they could make. In the end, though, I got to give it to the best team. And early in the season, we talked about how when Ohio State is on, they're the best team in the country. And for a while, they did not look like that. They are on right now. And I just don't see how they don't live up to the moment in this game. So I'm going with Ohio State to cover.
I think, Sean, the only argument for Notre Dame is this. Ohio State's strength, when they're playing really well, perhaps their wide receiver room is not only the best wide receiver room in the country, it's possibly the best position group in the country. They are that good. They are that special. And when they were playing well, and it took them, as you said, most of the season till we saw it, and we saw it at the most important time, come playoff time, Oregon, Tennessee, you know, those back-to-back games. And even against here, they, you know, they beat Texas. Texas considered a very good team, and they were still able to handle business there. But Notre Dame, they are strongest where Ohio State is strongest. So that in defending the pass. So that's where this game is going to be fascinating. With all that said, Sean, I'm going to say what I've been saying since the start of the season. Most talented team in the country is Ohio State. And at their best, and you hope that both these teams play their best game and it'll make it more exciting. But at their best, I think Ohio State is 10 to 12 points better than Notre Dame.
I think you nailed it right there. I think when they're playing their best, it is a double-digit win. And they're very capable of that. You know, hopefully for the game's sake, Notre Dame goes out and can really stay in this game and keep it close. But you know, if we're talking about a real prediction, it's got to be Ohio State for me.
All right. Well, we are going to find out next Monday. It seems almost crazy to say, oh, Ohio State, our brothers in the Big Ten. It'll look good for the Big Ten. I don't know if I could actually root for them, but I think they're going to win. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.